Welcome to the Perfect Life Awakening Show, hosted by Royce Morales. Royce has been a transformational facilitator, teaching groundbreaking, spiritually-based courses for more than four decades. She is the author of three books about her teachings. Join Royce as she takes you on a journey into how to live your best life and find your true purpose through discovering the origins of subconscious, disempowering notions, and releasing them. She talks with experts and inspiring people just like you who learned to trust their intuitive inner wisdom, which led to life-changing shifts. Today, her guests live an empowered existence and are helping change the world to a higher consciousness place based on truth and love. You deserve to awaken to, align with, and embody your true self and live a life filled with love. Transform yourself from triggered to empowered and create your perfect life. Here is your host, Royce Morales.
Hello, welcome to the Perfect Life Awakening Show. I'm Royce Morales, and I have an amazing guest today, but let me just chat about myself. I always like to chat about myself first, since it is my show. So, excuse me, when I arrived in this life, I brought with me two qualities. I desperately wanted to find answers to what life is all about, what happens when we die, who are we really, etc. You know, those big questions. And the other quality I brought was skepticism. It was kind of an innate quality, and my mom certainly encouraged it because she was such an intellectual. So these two qualities may sound contradictory, but they helped me to weed out fakeness and, you know, all that weird stuff that goes on that nobody can prove, but everybody just kind of believes in. And it taught me to trust my logic and yet simultaneously follow what intuitively felt right until it proved itself to me. I was always looking for that proof, personal proof. So ultimately, what really changed my life was having personal, undeniable, spiritual, and paranormal experiences. I don't really like that word, but I'll use it because, I don't know, you guys know what it means. So things like I had a full-on out-of-body experience, and I went to visit a friend of mine out of my body, and then we compared notes the next day. So it's like I couldn't really deny that. I felt led to say certain things to people and they would look at me in amazement. How did you know that? Things like that. Past life memories. I think one of the biggest, profoundest experiences I had was getting in touch with a past life where I had poisoned myself and I saw it clearly and I felt the poison go down my throat. And after that experience, I stopped having stomach problems. So things like that, that I couldn't deny, even though I wanted to, even experiencing things like that, I'd still say to myself, oh God, I must have made that up, you know. But after all those experiences and a million more, I started teaching others and I based my teachings on my personal experiences because to me, they were so true that I couldn't deny them. But I'll tell you, whenever people arrive in my classes that are skeptical, I just love that because hopefully they'll have some experiences that they can't deny it and get some proof that they're dying to receive. And I also find, and this is kind of funny, I find that the biggest skeptics are the ones that transition into the biggest believers. And I think that's really interesting because being one of them myself, that's what seems to happen. Which leads me to tell you about my guest, Liz Enten. Her background is in fashion, zero waste, and startups. She's a New York-born former fashion stylist who spent the early part of her career assisting and styling her own photo shoots until she decided to grow her blog that she called Runway Passport, which covered fashion weeks all around the world. Then her dad passed. And she began an in-depth 5-year exploration of the afterlife, at first only for herself, her own curiosity. She expected nothing but belief-based religion or fantasy, or as some of us know this word, woo-woo, woo-wooism. wishful thinking, all that stuff. But she was blown away by what she discovered, even though she was always waiting for that catch, that one little part that would go, ha ha, nope, not true. She was so baffled by what she saw and who she met, so she kept digging. And the deeper she went, the more astounded she was to learn that maybe everything afterlife and paranormal related, I'll get that word out, wasn't a bunch of bunk. Her discoveries completely transformed the way she views the world and consciousness, and of course, death. Now, as an atheist, I just love this because I'll tell you a story about me being an atheist for a while too. As an atheist, she brought a healthy dose of science-based skepticism, but the evidence was convincing. And then she decided to share her story and wrote a book she titled WTF Just Happened. And I'm sure you guys know what WTF stands for. I'm not sure we can use the real word on this show, so I'll just keep calling it WTF. She hosts the podcast Science and Spirituality Dinners, private dinner series that explores scientific evidence of afterlife. It's interesting, and I'll ask her more about this, that she still considers herself skeptical, and maybe even considers herself an atheist. I'll find out about that too. So welcome, Liz. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear your story. So let's just talk about skepticism for a minute, given the fact that we're both diehard skeptics. I still am. Things still have to be proven for me. But why do you think you were so skeptical? What is that about for you?
I mean, I just think it seems completely illogical until I start digging into the data. How could consciousness exist without a brain? I mean, I don't think I overall walk around as an exceptionally skeptical person about everything, but you know, there are people who are extreme skeptics where they see evidence for things and they're like, oh, that I don't believe that. It wasn't how I was living my life overall until this. It's just, I definitely believe extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and brains make sense. We see neural pathways, we can scan brains, brain surgery. It just seems like an astronomical claim to say, oh, actually our consciousness is stored out of a brain. So that just, to me, seemed just, yeah, I guess the best word's astronomical and a little absurd. I mean, why would anyone, there just was, as far as I knew at that point, no reason I would ever think that. So, and then I guess skeptical, I believe in like healthy skepticism, which means you examine claims. Yes. You want evidence. You don't just, some person says, oh, believe this because it feels good, or believe it because there's this one book and the book has no backing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with believing if it brings you happiness and joy or resonates with you. I'm not judging people who do get solace in forms of belief, but that's just not me. So
yeah, me too. I've never been one that just has blind faith. You know, I listen to people that are very deeply religious, and they'll say things, and if I question them, they say, well, I believe it because I have faith. Well, I just can't do that. So what, and why an atheist? And let me tell you the story that I alluded to. You'll get a crack up about it. I was 10 years old. I was in the back seat of my parents' car. We were driving back from somewhere, a long trip. I don't even know what triggered this, but I, with a very loud voice, said to them, announced that I swear to God, I'm an atheist. And my parents cracked up. That's and they hilarious. Just fell out. And I had no idea why it was funny. You know, I just thought when you're about to say something that's really true, you say, I swear to God. So they just thought it was the funniest thing ever. So what made you lean in that direction or even declare that you're an atheist? What is that about?
Yeah, I mean, it just, again, that seems like the default logical. I never saw evidence of God. I actually still haven't. I was raised. It wasn't, you know, you hear a lot of people who are atheists and they are ardent about it. Most of them are raised religiously. I was just raised culturally Jewish, very secular. New York City, secular culture, again, fairly Jewish culture, but very secular intellectual Jewish culture, which is very different. Just God was just completely irrelevant to my life. Like if I went to someone's bar bat mitzvah, it would be in the talk, or, you know, we would celebrate holidays, it might be in a prayer, but it was just holiday based and kind of tradition rather than belief. So it wasn't, I'm an atheist and I've decided this. It was just, God was not part of my life or really anyone's life I knew. It was just irrelevant and never discussed. And again, an astronomical claim. Like, I feel anyone making a claim that there's anything like a God, that the burden of proof would be on them. Again, not in any way judging people who have faith, because there are people I've since met who get great healing and joy and solace from that. But if I'm talking from a strictly a person who approaches things from an evidence-based world, I never saw anything. It was just, I don't remember. I don't think I had a single conversation about God in my childhood, just because no one talked or thought about it very much.
Yeah. So I think we have the same background. I was culturally Jewish as well, but never religious. My parents never took me to temple, you know, and shortly after I declared I was an atheist, I then decided that I wanted to be, I wanted to go to church. And I used to beg my parents to let me go to church. And my mother would ask, well, why? And I would explain that, well, it's beautiful. I don't think the Jewish religion is really beautiful. It's not speaking to my soul. I didn't call it a soul in those days, but so I was so drawn to that, to the, I don't know, the rituals and the beautiful churches and the art and all of that. So that's pretty interesting that we have that in common too.
Well, actually my mom was Protestant. So we celebrated Christmas. We celebrate Christian and Jewish holidays, but none of them tied in religion. Like, to me, if you asked me what Christianity was about as a kid, it was like, oh, Santa Claus, the Easter bunny, you know, that was
me too.
Easter was about the Easter bunny. Yeah. Which was really fun for a kid.
Yeah. We had a Christmas tree and, you know, definitely nothing except just having fun holidays. That's what it was about for me. So, okay. With all of that in mind, you say that your dad's passing made you a believer. Tell us what happened. Tell us that story.
Okay. I won't say a believer. I will say I now think there is a preponderance of evidence that consciousness most likely is non-local. Yeah. That's a reasonable conclusion, but I never use the word believer. So yeah, unfortunately my dad passed, and my immediate thought when he was in hospice, and I knew this wasn't logical, but you know, when you're sort of in trauma, like weird thoughts are racing through your brain. My very first thought was, okay, now most of science fiction seems to come true when you look at old science fiction with things like Zoom, for example. Now, a big theme of science fiction is time travel. Is there ever any way you could time travel? And because if you could, we wouldn't really know if there were time travelers or people just being pulled into the future. So it was just a passing thought. And I Googled that. So I started reading about a lot of Einstein's theories of time relativity. And the most remarkable thing is, while it's not easily doable, theoretically, yes, you can time travel. If we managed to build a spaceship that could travel almost at the speed of light, and you took two twins, this is just one example of time relativity, and one of them traveled at close to the speed of light and the other stayed on Earth, I'm going to have the exact times wrong, but the concept is correct. One, like the twin who traveled for 5 years, let's say, and when they came back to Earth, like 30 years would have passed on Earth, and the other twin would be 30 years older, another time be 5 years older. And that just showed that something that feels so structured, unchangeable, actually is not the way we experience it. It's more flexible. And so that was just, I was like, there are layers going on. that we can't possibly understand. Which led to my next thought, which is how I ended up here. My very next thought was, at this point, I assumed consciousness was created by brains and brain neurons. So I had a thought. Now, this happened once and created me and once and created my dad. Why in 300 years could another set of brain neurons not create another human being and I would get to be that person? Not Liz, not I wouldn't look the same. I wouldn't have the same personality, but I would be a person and my dad would be a person. We wouldn't be in each other's lives. We wouldn't know it. But if your other only other frame of reference is complete obliteration, seems like a pretty good deal. So that was my next thought. And I just had a tiny thought. If this is true, is there ever any chance that somehow a memory carried over? I didn't think it most likely did, but this was worth a Google search. And that's where everything changed, because I found these two researchers, Dr. Ian Stevenson, who has since passed away, and Dr. Jim Tucker. They are traditional child psychiatrists, professors at the University of Virginia, and they study cases of kids with past life memories from a data-based investigative approach. And I was like, oh, well, I'm sure that this is just very preliminary, but I dug in. I mean, they're being interviewed at now Dr. Tucker interviewed at NPR, Scientific American, and books, and there's just data after data after data. And that was the first insight that there is something astronomical going on, a valid research that nobody knows about.
Wow. Yes. When you said children being studied that have had past life memories, I've had several students that have had their children have such strong past life memories that it changed their parents' viewpoint of all of this. You know, I had one student that her son, all of a sudden, they were crossing the street, and all of a sudden her son, I think he was like 3 years old, he just went ballistic. He wouldn't cross the street. And she's like, what? And he says, oh, mommy, my last life, I was killed by a car as I was crossing the street. And it was so clear to him and so clear to her that she couldn't deny it. So there's that kind of stuff that goes on. So, wow. So tell us some of the research that you found. Tell us what you learned from all this.
About the kids with past life memories. Okay. Or, yeah. Because that was the first body of research I found.
Yeah. Or any.
All of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I'll say that Drs. Jim Tucker and Stevenson were part of a whole research department at the University of Virginia called Division of Perceptual Studies, made up of serious scientists, researchers, professors, studying not only cases of kids with past life memories, near-death experiences. They did some research on psychic mediums, although there's some other groups that focus on that more, like the Winbridge Institute with Dr. Julie Beischel and Mark Bacuzzi, that I can go into more. But I'm going to break it down first with the kids with past life memories. The cases were remarkable because Dr. Tucker would study the kid's case if it was really strong and then go find the original person who'd passed away and matched it up. And these were young children. They were under 4 years old, under five. So it wasn't like they would have picked up years of knowledge and maybe had put it together and, you know, unconsciously, not intentionally lying, but, you know, we all grow up and have piles of knowledge bases and you can't say where they're from.
Yeah.
And in the most remarkable case, and it's in the Netflix series Surviving Death, or one of the most remarkable, there are others too, a little boy remembered being a World War II pilot, and he started with trauma, like dreams and just terrors, night terrors, screaming like plane on fire, little man goes down. And essentially what ended up happening is, I mean, just one example is he had three little dolls. One had, let's say, red hair, one brown hair, and one blonde hair. And they were these little, army dolls. And he gave them each a name. So after making a long, in-depth story, very, very short, lots of research, they traced who this boy had memories of being. And they found people in this Air Force troop, and there was had been someone. Now they were either passed away or were elderly men with gray hair, but the hair colors matched up with three people in his Air Force troop with that hair color. Mm-hmm. He met his sister, who is now an elderly woman, and they had conversations about memories. He met mm-hmm. people who've been in his Air Force troop, and they backed up stories this little boy had shared. And I mean, it was just remarkable. And I mean, this is the James Leininger case, and everyone should definitely read it. And this is just one of many cases, as well as lots of little anecdotes of what you shared with your friend. And while those in and of themselves, without all the data of the backed up cases, couldn't really count as strong evidence, when you bring piles of those stories to many verified cases, there's something going on.
Yes.
And there are even a few funny, oh, I'm sorry, you were saying?
No, I was just agreeing. Yes, there's a lot going on. Yes.
Yeah. And there are even like this one I just share because it's really funny. There was apparently a little boy, and he just lived in a normal American middle class family. And I guess he'd been someone very wealthy in his previous life. And there's one day he just slammed his fist down, this little 3-year-old boy, and screamed, "I cannot live in these conditions anymore. Where's my servant?" Or something like that.
Oh my God.
Where is this coming from? So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
So first of all, my husband, as an adult, when he started doing some inner work, I was his teacher before I was his wife. He too got in touch with being in World War II as a fighter pilot. And that's so interesting. And through the years, you know, I find that we only receive as much as we're ready for when we get in touch with past lives. So it took him years of looking at that and having it pop up in his meditations, getting details about that. It took him years to resolve all the stuff that came with that lifetime into this one. So yeah, it's important. You know, I guess as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, gosh, when I first started getting in touch with past lives, because I was still such a skeptic and I needed proof, I started researching to look back to see if I could find that person that I was. And then it finally dawned on me, it's like, you know what really matters here is if I got in touch with it, I resolved some issues in this life by getting in touch with past lives, like the stomach issue that I shared. There are hundreds of issues that I resolved just by getting in touch with past lives and what I brought with me. So yeah, but it's so fascinating to see that people can actually find that proof, and that you have, you know, researched all of that and found that proof. So what other proof have you found?
I guess I use the word more evidence than proof. I wish it was proof, but I don't know if we'll ever have proof, but strong evidence. Mm-hmm. And also mediumship. There are two organizations, although also Division of Perceptual Studies at University of Virginia studies mediums as well. But the two main ones are, first of all, the Winbridge Institute, as I mentioned before, founded by Dr. Julie Beischel and Mark McQueen. And they do up to quintuple blinded peer-reviewed studies on psychic mediums. And the other is the Forever Family Foundation. And they have a board of scientists, and they certify psychic mediums to assure they can get accurate information under strict controls, where they can't use cold reading, they can't use hot reading. And there's a percent of mediums that get really accurate information. And in both cases, you know, when Winbridge certifies, as well as when Forever Family certifies, you know, it has to be accurate as well as specific. Like, a medium can't say, "I'm sensing you lost a great grandfather, they loved you." I mean, it has to be specific. They could happen to get a great grandfather, but they would, you know, have to know specific things about them that wouldn't apply to everybody. So both those just blew me away. And I mean, for example, in Winbridge, the mediums, they would do it in one of the up to quintuple blinded studies. For example, Dr. Beischel would be on the phone with the medium, getting information for somebody else for their reading. She didn't know who the person getting who the reading was even for. So it was really blinded. And the medium had the first name of the deceased person, and that was it. And at that time, the sitter, that's the person getting a reading from a medium, would quote unquote tell their loved one to come into this medium. And then the medium was supposed to get specific stuff about their personality, relationship to the sitter. So Dr. Beichel's taking down all this information, no idea if it's accurate or not. So there could be no cueing. And most mediums are not this highly accurate, but there is a percent that are just unbelievable and able to get really accurate information in these situations. And when I started looking into the studies and the data of this, I was like, there is something going on that just, wow, could this be real?
Yeah. So how do you feel about, I used to be a channeler. Talk about stepping away from skepticism and buying into all of that, which was very difficult, I must admit. But how do you feel about some people question that whole ability by saying, well, they're just picking up thoughts from the person they're reading for, rather than tuning into a past loved one? How do you feel about that?
So I have a lot to say about that. First of all, that's what Winbridge studied for. There's a lot of studies on this. There's also, I can go into the research of Dr. Jeff Tarrant after this, but at Winbridge, for example, the medium is, that's one of the reasons Dr. Beichel was blinding it and sitting there herself, because how could they be reading the mind of a person if that person isn't even on the phone? And another is sometimes they get information that the sitter says, I never heard of that, I don't know. And then they go home and verify it. Mm-hmm. That's another reason to study it. And then this takes a little bit of trust, but the mediums really say it feels different. And I thought that was really interesting. Another study conducted by Winbridge, they had mediums give readings for a couple different people blinded. And they were just given the name of the person. And I don't know if a tiny bit more information, but some of the people were deceased and some were still living. And there were some differences in the readings. And mediums said they always felt significantly more love when they were reading the ones who passed away. And also mediums overall just say sometimes if you speak to them, they say it feels different. Now, again, that goes into trust. But then you go to another researcher, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, and he scans mediums' brains using EEGs, and he's found fascinating results. And also, he's found different brain activity when mediums give psychic readings versus mediumship reading. For example, this one, I love sharing this specific medium, although he's scanned quite a few mediums' brains of ones who are involved with Forever Family. I believe the mediums he scanned are Laura Lynn Jackson, Janet Mayer, Angelina Diana, and Joanne Gerber. And there might be some others, but those are the four I know. But so with Laura, when she gets information, she sees a screen and she gets all her mediumship information on one side and all the psychic information on the other side. And when Dr. Tarrant scanned her brain, the brain neural activity matched up with the different sides. So that combined with them saying it feels different, combined with often people say, I don't know if that's true, I never heard that, and then their family verifies, I mean, all of that's just backs up that they're not reading someone's mind, although I don't want to say just reading someone's mind, because that's pretty remarkable if you are. That still is also showing consciousness can travel non-locally.
Well, we need to take a bit of a break, and just to tell everybody that's watching and listening, I'm talking to Liz Enten, and she's the author of WTF, What Happened? And we'll be right back.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Own Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Own Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Own Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Own Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Own Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Own Times. Open yourself to the possibilities. Transform your life from triggered to empowered with the Perfect Life Awakening program. Royce Morales' extraordinary, enlightening, spiritually based teachings that get to the core of subconscious underlying motivations driving your life. With more than four decades as a transformational facilitator and author, Royce Morales offers ways to awaken your deserving, authentic existence, free from paralyzing issues, repetitive patterns, and programmed fears, while simultaneously awakening your spiritually aware, higher consciousness, purposeful self. Perfect Life Awakening offers remote group classes and one-on-one sessions to explore even deeper levels. Check out Royce Morales' books, Want, True Love, Past Lives, and Other Complications, Know, A Spiritual Wake-Up Call, and Back, Rebirth After Stroke. Learn more about Perfect Life Awakening and Royce Morales. Visit RoyceMorales.com.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Liz Enten, and she's the author of WTF Just Happened? ! I love it. And so we were talking about examples. I'm wondering if you have any personal examples that you experienced that have given you some evidence about all of this.
Yeah, I've had quite a few. So aside from all the research, I decided to go get some of my own medium readings. And I've actually gotten a lot at this point, because to me, I just feel like I'm watching a human being defy the laws of the universe when they're good. And when they're not, I'm testing my skills of judgment and assessment. And I've gotten mediums who just, I mean, the things they knew of the good ones blew me away. My very first reading, for example, she knew my cat had also just passed away. She's like, said, your cat's with your dad, the sweet one. And we always called her the sweet cat. In full disclosure, I did have to tell her I'd lost my dad, but she started with the initial of his first name. She said, who is that? And yeah, initials can be questionable. If that was the only bit of evidence she got, I wouldn't count it as an evidential reading, but it was just evidence after evidence. She knew my grandmother had a child pass away when the child was basically a baby. She brought up a color and she said, like, green, which I write about this in my book. And she's like, why is your dad sending like a burst of green? And that was his favorite color. We had a little room in the house, and that was like his little extra room that was his favorite, painted in his favorite color. She knew, so my mom's a therapist, a psychoanalyst, and she's like, I'm seeing like a therapy couch. Is your mom a therapist? And then this part I just thought was so cute. She's like, is your mom like one of the best in the world? Like, he's saying like your mom's like this world famous, top best in the world therapist. Now, my mom's really good, but our patients like her, we love her, but that's how my dad would talk about her all the time. He was always like, this is the best therapist in the whole world, you know? So that was just kind of touching and cute. And that was one example. And, you know, others have gotten like his favorite hobby, which I never say because it's really evidential when they get it. They've gotten some names. They've gotten names of my grandma. They've gotten memories. One, for example, we'll say things that are going on at the time, like my computer was being repaired and they were so slow with it. It was such a pain. And one medium's like, your dad says, stop stressing about your computer. It'll be back and ready soon. She couldn't have known that. And I mean, I give fake names in readings. I give, fake names, like have friends pay, but, you know, they can't know, they can't Google me. And so it really, I found all that amazing. And then I had a few weird personal experiences myself. I don't really consider myself someone who has abilities, but twice, and it's only when I've been around mediums, I had really weird experiences. Like once I was at a Forever Family event, and anyone with abilities had a chance to practice giving readings, and all the mediums were there and to give them feedback. And as a joke, people dared me to go up and try, knowing I'm super skeptical and knowing that I don't have abilities. And I went like to do a cold reading just as a joke, not to deceive anyone. And I started feeling all these waves and weird feelings. And this was my first time at Forever Family events. So I didn't know the mediums well, except for maybe like, actually, I didn't really know any of them that well at this point. And I went over for some reason. I was gonna like kind of give a cold reading on this one. I kind of knew, but I was gonna obviously make it a cold reading and not bring up sensitive information, make it clear it was like a joke to the guests. And for some reason, I walked over to this one I hardly knew at the time, though we've since become friends. And I was like feeling all these waves pour through me, and I felt like then all the waves moved to the spot of my head and like build up and burst and build up and burst. I was like, wait, did someone die of an aneurysm? He's like, yes. And I was like, what the, like, won't say it, but I was like, oh my God, what is going on? Then it moved to my heart and the same thing. And I was getting accurate information. And I felt it physiologically. And I wasn't getting accurate information to the level like a medium that you should pay would for, you know, they would ideally say, you know, I'm getting like a mother figure, their mother or grandmother, and I'm feeling they pass of a heart attack. So I'm feeling it there. And I am seeing this, like, I don't know, like some memory between the two of you that was specific. And I'm seeing she did this for work. Like that would be a good medium reading. You know, what I was doing was just having experiences, and I could never have it to that ability. Although one time I go into these verses in my book kind of in detail, the physiological feelings, because I had it happen one other time and it was just crazy. And then I've had lots of little, like, I haven't had official out of body experiences, but I've had sensations where I feel as if like maybe the energy moves like a couple inches above my body, and just lots of weird little things. And the more you study this, I think even if you are not a person with abilities, you do have lots of weird things happen to you. And you know, you mentioned out of body with a friend, for example. One of my people who've taught me is Lloyd Arbach, and he's president of Forever Family Foundation. He's a parapsychologist, a stage magician, so he can recognize when things are being faked. And he's a teacher and I believe one of the like heads of the Rhine Institute, which was founded years and years ago by J.B. and Louisa Rhine, who are kind of some of the original parapsychologists, and it's a very like science evidence-based approach to studying all of this. And he said he's a stage magician and researcher, and he said when he first began examining all this, he started having experiences. And you know, it seems us like non-medium people have our own, like, you know, scattered and not consistent and not, you know, experiences that people should pay us to help them with their grief the way people should mediums. But just weird little verifications that happen now and then that are just like, oh my God.
Yes. It's funny. As you're talking, I'm remembering my full-on out-of-body experience when I first kind of got involved in metaphysics and all of that. And it was so profound for me, especially getting proof from my friend the next day when I called him up and I told him, well, this is what I saw and you were doing this and, you know, this is what you were saying. And he's like blown away. But after that, I never had another one. And I used to pray. I used to say, come on, I want another one. And what my spiritual higher consciousness said to me each time was, first of all, you only needed it to get proof. So you got proof. You don't need to do that. And second of all, what are your motives? Why do you need to do that? You know, do you have any particular higher consciousness motives for wanting to be out of your body? And I said, well, no, you're right. I don't. And so I haven't had one ever since. I mean, I've had other things, but I've never had that sensation of absolutely leaving my body. So, yeah. In case anybody's listening going, I really want to do that. Well, check your motives. And, you know, is it from needing proof or is it from wanting to spy on your friends or, you know, whatever it is. So
All of the above.
I had to admit that, yeah, that was really fun to spy on my friend. So, I wanted to ask you about the whole issue of skepticism, unless you have more to share in terms of your book or some of your own personal experiences. Is there anything else that you'd like to?
I guess I can share one last quick story because this was a combination of a personal experience and verified by a medium. Shortly after my cat passed away, I was kind of half falling asleep and I really felt her there with me and saw her, not like eyes open, saw her, but like stronger than a dream or making up, but not as strong as if she was actually in the room. And I really felt her energy as well as really saw my mind's eye. And I said to her, Simba, I feel like you're really around. If so, I need evidence. I'm not just going to believe this. And I woke up to a message from a medium I was friends with who said, do you have a certain cat, like described my cat, like a cream orange cat who followed you around like a dog and was obsessed with food? I was like, yeah. And this, I hadn't really posted this cat. Like this medium wouldn't have logically known. And I sent her a photo. It was a medium I trust is honest and has already passed a lot of science-based testing. And they were like, yeah, that's the cat. So that's just a little anecdote I thought I would add. Yeah. So
has your dad ever come personally to you in any way?
I've had visitations, I think. They haven't been verified, but I've had what visitation dreams, which feel stronger than regular dreams. And I had a visitation where I saw him and jumped early on studying this. I was so startled. I wasn't scared. I was really happy, but I was startled. And I mean, I hope that happens more. I hope I have a chance to ask him some questions. Yeah. I mean, I'm an evidence person. So the question is, tell me something that mom knows that I don't. Yeah. And then I'll ask her and verify it. I'm like, that's what I want to be. That's what I want evidence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, careful what you ask for, as they say.
Yeah.
So we just have a few more minutes and I wanted to talk to you and just kind of bring it out in the open in terms of why so many people are skeptical nowadays. I've read that there are hordes of people that are leaving organized religion and, you know, when people check the box on what is your religion, they check none or unknown or whatever the options are in those forms. So why do you think that is? Why is that going on? Almost like a pandemic of sorts.
Well, I think religion has nothing to do with the stuff I'm talking about. I think those are two totally different things. I think religion, again, while it's done some wonderful things, I think especially lately it's done some not such great things and maybe hasn't been as respectful of human rights in certain ways. I think that's been sort of a violation to some people as we've seen the effects of that I won't go into the details of that, obviously, but I think that, you know, we have so much more science that we have a lot more explanations of things. I mean, you go back to ancient religions, like with Zeus, there was reasons, you know, gods made the sunrise and, you know, I think the best thing religion seems to offer is community and then if you can find a healthy community, but I don't know, religion's not, definitely not part of my life. I think religion's totally has nothing to do with the stuff I'm talking about. So now why the skepticism for the like afterlife evidence? I think multiple reasons. It's not known about the stuff that gets the the data, the research, the quintuple blinded studies at Winbridge aren't known about. The fact that mediums pass science-based testing at Forever Family Foundation isn't known about. And a lot of, you know, stuff that gets the most attention is the most sensationalized. So people will write extreme books or start these extreme Instagram channels, and extremity gets a lot of the views the most time. So people will see it and say, oh, this is absurd. And it can be absurd. And I think that's what people hear about. And I think if, you know, I think it's, again, the default. It seems the most logical that our consciousness is created by a brain. And until you start delving into this unfortunately unknown research, why would you think otherwise? Although I have noticed people are more open when I mention this stuff. Yeah. While people might not identify with religions, they're like, this is interesting. I'm open. I was so scared to tell people. I thought they were going to say, you lost your mind. But I've been really curious.
Yeah.
So I think it's moving to, like, there are skeptics that are so extreme that, you know, as Lloyd Auerbach, who I mentioned before, we'll call them fundamentalist disbelievers. And it's an interesting book by a writer called Craig Weiler, who wrote about, like, a lot of the, like, Wikipedia's role in blocking a lot of this information. Well, Wikipedia, I'm not knocking Wikipedia. I love them and they're wonderful in many areas in terms of getting the information out about parapsychology and parapsychological research. They just think all of it's bunk. So they actually are bringing that agenda to Wikipedia. And that's my only complaint about Wikipedia. Again, not knocking them in general, but that shows up first in Google results. So if you Google some of this, you see that's nonsense. And then you're like, oh, okay, you know, why go further? It takes a lot of digging. So I think, and I also think that there has been a lot of stuff that's more like, I don't want to say spiritual based, but there's stuff that's been dangerous when it's just been beliefs, like false medicines, don't go to the doctor, like things that could kill you. And so, you know, that's why anti-science can be physiologically dangerous. So I think a lot of this, unfortunately, is seen as anti-science because the scientific research hasn't been delved into.
Yes. Yeah, and it just seems that maybe skepticism is a good thing because it's making us question and think about, I mean, not just religion. I wasn't referring just simply to skepticism when it comes to religion. I think it's in general, you know, all the people that the anti-vax movement and this movement and that movement, it sounds to me like people are just questioning. And I think that's good, really.
I think it's good to an extent. I think you need to educate yourself. Like if you're going to have strong opinions on medicine, maybe like go to medical school before you have a strong opinion. You know, I'm not going to trust someone who says I watched, especially not something that could maybe kill me or someone else, you know, like if I wanted, you can only examine so much. And there is a lot of in-depth information about a lot of topics. So if I wanted to get into immunology and feel like I had an opinion equal to someone who's, you know, been studying this for years, I think I'd, you know, would, if that became my passion to question, the way this did, I would probably go to medical school and then study immunology. And then, you know, I think skepticism combined with educating yourself, is pretty important. Although, you know, there's also been betrayals, again, brought up like the vaccine. I mean, the Sacklers with opioids, you know, I mean, that was a huge betrayal. And then people question things, but I think it can also get dangerous because, you know, you need to have a form of knowledge. And that, you know, before you have an opinion that consequences, there's a lot of things you can be skeptical about and be wrong and the consequences aren't very bad. Like if I'm wrong about this, I mean, I'll feel bad because I spread information that's completely wrong, but I'm also saying I don't know for sure I've drawn this conclusion, but no one's really going to be hurt by that. So that's why I think like skepticism, you have to be a little careful, but there should be a form of questioning. And it's just, you know, there's different types of questioning with different levels of consequences. And I think there needs to be that does need to be considered.
Yeah. And I think when people do question, at least for me, when I come from that questioning place, ultimately, I don't know. I don't know what the truth is. So I just listen to my intuition and follow that. So, and it hasn't been wrong yet. So, yeah.
Right.
So I wanted to, first of all, kind of lead you into talking about the work that you do for people. But it just seems like, at least for me, people that experience loss or feel like they're stuck in grief would definitely be drawn to all of this, and especially to some of the work that you've done in your book and the research, et cetera. But I have to say that that was my skepticism coming out, that, you know, I hadn't experienced a lot of loss in my life. And so when people would share with me, oh, you know, my mother died, but I know she's in heaven now and everything is fine, I would just like turn up my nose and go, oh my God, you know, it's like, it's just some made up, all of this is just some made up tactic to make you feel better and to deal with your grief. And you don't have to really feel sad if you know that your mom is okay. So I had that attitude about it. And now that I have experienced a lot of loss in my life, I find that I kind of combine the two. You know, I come from a place of skepticism. I don't really know what's happening with that person, but I also receive messages and visitations and all of that that lets me know that they really are okay. So again, it goes down to that evidence for me. So tell us a little bit about what your work actually and your writing actually does for people that are in that state of grief and sadness.
Well, I'm hoping, because this is all the research, I'm sharing my personal story of how I found this research, which helped me get through my grief. So I'm hoping it gives people, especially people who don't believe in religion or heaven and want evidence, or even, you know, if you believe some, but can't hurt to have it backed up.
Yeah.
You know, but especially I think the people who just have no hope, who are like, you know, oh, this is it, to give them a chance to hear and see that there's actually research to give them, again, I don't like to say proof because it's not proof, but to give them valid reasons to think that it's highly probable. And I'm hoping they'll go dig deeper if they need to.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, it's such a painful, like, loss is devastating no matter what you believe. Like, I remember early on when I started this research, I kept thinking if I got to a certain point, I won't feel grief anymore. And then it, like, the bar kept getting raised because I'd get to that. And then I was like, well, if I get to this, then I won't feel grief anymore. And I think no matter what, grief is inevitable. Like, I thought I was jealous of mediums. And I, when I found I could take classes and become a medium, I was like, well, I don't think I have the innate abilities, and I don't. But I had a thought that if I became a medium, I would never feel grief again.
Yeah. Right.
And I just think everyone feels it, but you can ease it. You can have hope within your grief,
yes,
I guess.
Yes.
And that's transformative.
Well, this has been just fascinating and wonderful. And tell people how to get in touch with you and how to get your book. And yeah.
Wonder. Oh, thank you. Okay. So my book's available on Amazon and my podcast is on all podcast apps. You can find all of it at WTFjustHappened.net. And there I'll update you what's going on. You can find my book, which is WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. And my podcast is also WTF Just Happened, all about the afterlife, no woo. And then, as you know, Royce kindly mentioned, I also host Science and Spirituality dinners, and you can reach out to me through my website to find out about those, because those are really fun, either in person or virtual private events.
Thank you so much, Liz Enten. And I love the title WTF. And best of luck. And thank you so much for all that you're doing. And I would just like to end by saying, you're welcome. I'd like to end by saying, deserve to find truth in your life. Thank you so much. And I'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Thank you.